as the 2024 NASCAR season is quickly approaching. Son, it's been a long time since we've got the band back together and done a podcast, but this 2024 season kind of crept up on me. Billy, I didn't do a whole lot of NASCAR watching last year. I don't think you did either. Yeah, we busy with a thousand different other things, with life and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you've been a lifelong NASCAR fan, and if you take off, you know, 10 or 12 races in a season, it feels like you're not much of a fan all of a sudden when you're used to consuming the product daily. But I'm ready to get back into it, Billy. I'm ready to see how everything plays out. And it's funny to me, Billy. The whole reason you and I even started talking about this again is because that Netflix series come out a couple weeks ago, and you'd asked me if I watched it, and I said, no, I'm getting ready to. Billy, within the first 15 minutes of watching it, I called you, and I said, okay, we're going to do this now. Billy, the dumbest thing I have seen in a long time is NASCAR putting Denny Hamlin at front and center, okay? And by the way, Denny Hamlin did a great job. Denny Hamlin is perfect for this role, right? But he's making his kids breakfast, and that pancake wasn't burnt that he made, Billy Bradley. That pancake was black as coal. and I'm sitting there, I'm like, why would – there's no way Denny Hamlin makes his kids breakfast every damn day if he burns a pancake that bad. I'm looking at that little kid, his little daughter's plate. It's got scrambled eggs and bacon on it. I guarantee that was because the cameras were rolling, Billy Bradley. Now, I say that because I was dying laughing knowing that just, okay, everybody thinks he's a normal dad. No, a normal dad who's got kids that old don't burn damn pancakes and going to breakfast. But other than that one little piece right there, Billy, I thought the whole thing seemed very, very natural. It was extremely believable. I don't think there was a script whatsoever. I was really impressed with it, and it just seems crazy to me that after all these years that Hard Knocks has been on and all that, that we're just now finally getting to this. But, Billy, I thought it was fantastic. What'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Denny Hamlin came out hands down and just took control of the situation, you know, as – Ryan Blaney, our NASCAR champion, I mean, pretty much was left out of the Netflix series, you know. Denny Hamlin just took it over, and by far, I mean, I think it gained several fans by this episode. Just not the episode, the whole series. I mean, about every show had Denny Hamlin main character at some point.
Yeah, it was good for Denny. It was good for NASCAR. Thought it was funny when they interviewed Christopher Bell, and he's like, yeah, y'all didn't think I was going to make it, did you? I mean, that was hilarious. You know, in Hard Knocks, you got one team to follow, right? It's easy. In NASCAR, I mean, you got 30 how many ever out there. We'll say 40, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But, you know, there's a dozen drivers that you need to follow, you know, 16 going into the chase and that sort of thing. And, you know, you only have X amount of resources. I think it was pretty funny that Christopher Bell realized that, said that, and you know the one of the probably the best dynamics that they didn't play a whole lot on was when Denny Hamlin came out and said, "Nah, if I have the opportunity, I'm helping, you know, 2311 more than I'm helping Joe Gibbs Racing," and Joe Gibbs seemed like, you know, they were going to have a talk about that behind closed doors. I don't think he appreciated that at all, Billy. Did you get that sense?
Yeah, I did get that sense. But, I mean, I totally see Dan Hamlin's perspective on that situation. I mean, you know, and Denny Hamlin almost has reeled me into being a fan. I mean, almost. We're close. We're not there yet, but we're close. And just – it seems like his whole demeanor has changed as far as, you know, his family life's getting back in order. He's spot on as a dad. I mean, that episode, I mean, like, he's hands-on, like, you know, making the breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got two kids. Well, I'm not making breakfast. It's McDonald's or Hardee's. We're catching for breakfast.
Yeah. Well, think about, you know, as we get older, you know, I remember, you know, couldn't stand Jeff Gordon. And, you know, by the time he was towards the end of his career, hell, I was rooting for that guy to have a good finish. Tony
yep.
Stewart, loved to hate that guy. You know what I mean? I loved to hate that guy. And towards the end, I was so happy he got a win at the road course in his last year. Jimmy Johnson, you know, how many times did I, you know, badmouth Jimmy Johnson about X, Y, or Z? Well, the, you know, arguably the greatest NASCAR driver to ever live. But towards the end of his career, I was the same way. I was, you know, and Kyle Busch, you know, same way. I mean, without Kyle Busch, what would our viewing experience be like, Billy? You have to have heels. You have to have heels in every sport, especially NASCAR. And as those guys get older and they mature, they're still heels, but you know, they're a lot more likable, I guess I would say. They're a lot less brash than they were when they're younger coming up. And I mean, I'm a fan of Danny Hamlin. I'll admit it. But we'll take Kevin Harvick. I couldn't stand Kevin Harvick. But I mean, at the end of his career, I wanted him to do well. I was really hoping that he would get a win. You know what
yep.
I'm saying? And I think we can say the same thing about Denny.
Same exact thing. You know, the best thing that happened to us, as much as it hate us, we hated to see it, our driver, Dale Jr., retiring. Like, it opened up so much more of the sport that, you know, you didn't focus on that one driver. You know, yeah, I didn't watch as much as I did, but every weekend we were still talking NASCAR in some sense, you know. I mean, it wasn't like we totally left the sport, you know. We just didn't attend as many races or watch as many races.
Billy, you said it very well. I've become a better fan, even though I've, you know, for 40 years, I've been pretty knowledgeable about the sport. Some years more knowledgeable than others, but I've become a much better fan when I didn't have a dog in the hunt. I spend time looking at other teams, you know, reading about, you know, other things, and a lot more than I did, you know, just my one driver. I mean, my God, we used to get together. We knew the damn chassis numbers that Dale Jr. was running, for Christ's sakes. That's ridiculous.
Amelia.
I mean, that. Yeah, Amelia, my God. Yeah, Amelia, until she finally crashed and burned. I mean, I've been seeing that. And that was fun. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed, you know, a deep dive and being all in Junior Nation. But being a fan of the sport is, hell, it's fun too. I miss the good old days when Dale Jr. was running around a track and I had somebody that wake up thinking about, you know, the race that day. Now I just, you know, I want to see a good race. I don't necessarily care who wins. It's more of who I don't want to win. More than who I do want to win, and that's a real fun time to be a fan. To be honest with you, I'm enjoying this. I'm going to say that this is the second phase of my career as a NASCAR fan. You know, I spent the first 40 years with a driver. Always had a driver from, you know, Dale Jarrett, moved into Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, before that it was Harry. Oh my God! What's Harry Gant? I mean, my first NASCAR driver was Richard Petty, and then I liked the Skull Bandit car, and then I moved to Dale Jarrett. I liked that American flag. I thought he was pretty cool, and it's Dale Earnhardt. I mean, that's been my drivers, my main drivers since I've been a kid, and now I don't have one. And hell, it's okay, Billy. I'm gonna be okay. What'd you think about? Did you listen to Marty Smith's interview with Dale Jr.?
Oh, man, I did. And I messaged you and you said, I hadn't caught it yet. I was like, dude, when you hear this, like, it's just like, you know, when me and you, we went a couple of months and not talked on the phone. You know? Then when you call and make that phone call, it's just like you pick right back up where you started, where you left off.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marty and Dale Jr. seem to have that same connection that, you know, they may go months without talking, but then they just pick right back up where they left off.
Yeah, you could tell they're true friends. You can tell they're true friends. A little bit of Marty Smith goes a long way with me, but it's not that I don't like him. I do. I think he does a fine job, but he is so damn nice.
And it
bothers me a little bit, I think. I mean, he's just always, you know, courteous, and that's an asshole thing to say, Billy Bradley, that the guy's too nice. But, like, I mean, I want him to say something controversial. I want him to pick a side, and he won't. But to his credit, my God, that's what we want out of news reporters. That's what, you know, we want somebody to just tell the facts, you know what I mean? He does a very, very good job of that. I just wish he had a little bit more adversarial conduct in him when he's talking to somebody just screwed up. But super nice guy. I thought the interview was very good. I did listen to have you listened to the Jeff Gordon episode yet?
I have not. That's I was going to start it today later on.
Well, check. I'm going to tell you one thing he says in the whole. You know, they talk about the main focus of the first part of the interview is the charter system. Okay, we're going into this year. We don't have the charter thing's not figured out. 2 years ago, they started a negotiating team to get with, you know, the NASCAR teams and NASCAR brass, and they didn't get shit worked out. You know, they're talking about the cost of the cars and the parts and all this kind of stuff, Billy. But here's the thing that, I mean, this is the funny part about this thing. It's a billionaire with NASCAR fighting with 100 millionaires with the teams, okay? It's a billionaire arguing with a 750 millionaire in Hendrick Motorsports about
good
money.
Way to put it.
Okay? So I take this with a grain of salt. But Jeff Gordon says Hendrick Motorsports hasn't made a profit in 10 years. Now, maybe the race team has not made a profit in 10 years, okay? But, Billy, something about business. They're doing business to business. Jim Gordon calls it B2B, business to business transactions. All those, you know, Hendrick Chevrolet dealerships and all that kind of stuff, they making money big time, just not at the race team. They're making money on real estate, for Christ's sake. You think that Hendrick Motorsports campus over there, hell, that's the size of a small D1, a D2 college, for Christ's sake. They've got more money invested in there. Their balance sheet is doing just fine. Maybe they're showing a loss on the sports, I mean on the competition side, but it absolutely, that ain't what they're after. They're after championships, but all that other stuff that Hendrick Motorsports does, Rick Hendrick does, that's where the bread and butter is. That's why Jeff Gordon, I mean, he ain't walking away because he ain't making no money, Billy.
Exactly. You know, if they weren't making any money, do you think they're still running four cars? No, they're not.
Billy, the one thing a rich man does is not spend foolish money. I mean, you think you see a lot of episodes, but the reason they're rich is because they know how to keep their money. They throw. They may not be making a profit on the sports side, but they're making a profit all the way around if you throw in the other things. And I guarantee you, showing that loss is a good thing for tax purposes. This is all to say. You got billionaires arguing about with 100 millionaires trying to figure out how to get a little bit bigger piece of the pie. Now, I'm going to speak with fork and tongue, Billy. I guarantee you NASCAR could absolutely afford to give up a piece of that pie. But the second they give up a piece of that pie, they ain't ever getting it back, Billy.
Oh, no, without a doubt. Once they give up that piece, a few more years, there's another piece. I mean, there's another piece. I mean, it's never ending.
Yeah, so this is one of them things. Jeff Gordon did make a statement, you know, we're just trying to get, you know, close to what we want. And he's on the negotiating team, by the way. So my guess is they want NASCAR, you know, they'd be willing to take something, and not maybe everything that they're asking for, but I just thought it was very very odd that they've got to, and everybody in the industry is trying to figure this thing out, right? I mean, we've heard, how many times we heard Dale Jr. is going to get a charter. Dale Jr. wants to do this. Dale Jr. wants to, I mean, the charter thing, and NASCAR is doing this. The reason, the way they're doing this is because they can. Like, you know, they don't want a franchise. They don't want to do like the NFL. They did, you know, NBA, NHL, MLB. They could if they really wanted to. But that TV money, brother, that's a big steady paycheck.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to me what, like, from what I can gather, that they're after is, you know, just a little bit, a little piece of the big piece of pie.
Yeah. Well, and let me tell you what NASCAR did. One thing that is, you know, strikes me that Dick Gordon mentioned today, and it doesn't get talked a whole hell of a lot, but the fact of the matter is NASCAR upended, NASCAR sanctioning body upended an entire industry and an entire region of the country when they went from, you know, the traditional car to these, you know, just buying parts and putting them together, right? You had fabricators, you had all these guys making, Dale Jr. says, ball bearings and stuff, you know, all these housing pieces that you had to have in your shop. Well, now they just order them, and then they put them in inventory, and they just pull them out and build a car with it, bolt that shit together. So NASCAR completely upended tens of thousands of families by changing the way they did this, all in an effort to make it cost less. I would argue, Billy, that they, so far, I don't think the sport is better because of this car. I don't think, I mean, we've fixed mile-and-a-half tracks. Is it fair to say mile-and-a-half tracks are better to watch now than they used to be?
Oh, without a doubt. You know what? A little racing, and it was so weird. You never would watch Charlotte. How many times did you spend Texas Motor Speedway and just spend the time walking around talking to them? Now, those are the
every
races
time
you want to watch. You don't want to care about much about Bristol. I mean, it's not there. I mean, yes, it's Bristol, and it will always be Bristol, but the mile and a half is the best racing product that we have right now.
Yeah, it's an odd thing what's happened with, Jeff Gordon says it's not, you know, significantly lower in cost, and in the first year it was obviously, you know, more expensive. They expected that, but, you know, it's not significantly, it's not lower in cost. I'm not sure the racing is okay. It hasn't improved races at every track, but NASCAR didn't give a shit that they were, you know, putting all these people out of work when they decided to go to this. You know, I mean, NASCAR is still making moves to make them money, plain and simple. And the minute that they start franchising, it's the second that they lose the money. The second that they lose control of the money, and they're not going to do that. They might throw them a bone, you know, here or there, but you had, you know, Penske, you know, Hendrick, get all the drivers, the RTA has got the heavy hitters in the industry over there trying to negotiate it. NASCAR just, no, we're not doing it. So it's very interesting to hear everything Jeff Gordon said. It's very interesting. He's a pretty good interview. And I mean, like I said, we talk about these old guys that, you know, like Denny Hamlin now. I remember when he was a rookie, for Pete's sake, and he had the best commercial ever seen when he was mowing his grass and started bumping his neighbor while he was mowing his grass. That's one of my favorite commercials of all time. But Jeff Gordon has turned out to be a very good person for the sport. The guy's got so much knowledge and so much. I mean, he's really good in the front office, Billy. I'm impressed with him. I thought he was making maybe a little bit of a mistake when he got out of the TV booth, but man, I think he's going to be great for the sport for a long, long time. Just like Dale Jr. is going to be great for the sport for a long time. We do have – I watched 0 minutes of the clash. How much did you watch?
I watched 0 minutes because I was under the impression that we were at a basketball tournament Saturday. I had taken Sunday off because I planned on it, and I totally get it that, you know, they had weather coming in. And, you know, I never would have thought NASCAR would have raced it on Saturday night. They have never done that I can recall. Moved the race up. They moved them back several days, but I've never known them to move the race up. But was it the right call? Absolutely. I think it was the right call.
Yeah, I agree, Billy. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, golf does it all the time. Moving it up to get that race in was smart, and I'm glad it worked. I think, you know, some people are obviously going to be mad that, you know, they might have had tickets and couldn't go, but the fact of the matter is, you know, if – I mean, that's the way they should do these races. I mean, because I've sat at Bristol more times than I care to talk about watching it rain when we could have got the damn race in the night before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Poor Johnny Hayes, the first two races he went to there. He never saw a lap, I don't think.
Johnny Hayes and I flew into Bristol at, like, freaking midnight. I didn't fly into Bristol. I flew into the one in Virginia. I can't remember which one it was. But sat in the rain for 2 days and then left at 5:30 in the morning. 5:30 in the morning. And then the next day, 2 days later, Dale Jr. announced he was retiring, for Christ's sake. So, yeah, that was a kick in the pants. Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about that. But I didn't watch any of the Clash. Dale Jr. thinks we should watch the Clash. I don't give a damn about that fucking race. It's, I don't give a damn about it. I mean, I remember when they had Kevin Conway and Stephen Lichter in the damn, you know, Bud shootouts or whatever the hell they were calling them, because they were the rookie of the year. They didn't have enough people to make a damn race. They put those two jokers in them. I think both of them together probably have 40 starts in NASCAR Cup Series. I don't think there's anything special about that race. And I think it's less special, Billy, when you don't even have it at, you know, Speed Weeks, which we don't even have anymore. If you want to run that race, I mean, I don't care about it. But I would watch it if it was on a Wednesday night before the duels. I might watch it then. You know, this week, like if it was on tonight, and we're recording this on Wednesday of Daytona week, if it was on tonight, Billy, I'd probably watch the damn thing.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it always used to be. Like, you know, on, like you said, a Wednesday night, Thursday night, watch it. And it's, I agree. I mean, I would watch it if it was at Daytona for sure, because, you know, it's Daytona. Things could happen at Daytona.
Yeah.
I don't care about L.A.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, Dale Jr. feels strongly about it, but he also likes the Coca-Cola 600, so he can't be trusted with his opinion. That's just crazy talk right there, Billy. Shit. I guess we probably should talk about Daytona 500, Billy. We've got, biggest race of the year. I know Jimmy Wags is going to be there. Submarine Mike, a lot of people been hitting me up on Twitter that are going to be going to the race. I'm a little jealous of them. I love that race, Billy.
One of the nicest.
I know you love it. What's that?
Like, Daytona has one of the nicest facilities around. You know, the year Junior retired, we hit all these racetracks. I still think Daytona by far has the nicest.
No question. Absolutely no question, Billy. Phenomenal facility. It's breathtaking. It's clean. It's everything you want out of a racetrack. I think, you know, there's a lot of people can win this race. We have seen a lot of different people win this race. We've seen, you know, people come out, win this race and not do a damn thing with it. Like, that Stenhouse won it,
McDowell,
a couple years ago. Didn't do anything with it. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Michael McDowell.
Oh, McDowell. I mean, McDowell, that carried him through for about, you know, first half of the season. That win, you know, looked good on him, but, you know, he couldn't just, I mean, that team just couldn't do it. But you got to, like, Michael McDowell is is definitely can win at this race. I mean, he already has, but he could definitely win at this race. This racetrack is all about timing. This racetrack is all about who's there at the end, you know, missing the big one. Daytona and Talladega, I love plate racing, Billy, or tapered spacer racing, whatever the hell we want to call it. It's my favorite kind of racing that we do, Billy. One thing I do want to mention, Dale Jr. said, you know, Corey LaJoie, he thought Corey LaJoie might win a race this year. And, Bill, you know I'm a fan of Doug Ducart. He went over to Spire Racing. Now, Doug Ducart, you know, was at Hendrick Motorsports for a very long time. Then he went over to Chip Ganassi. And Doug Ducart, I mean, he's a heavy hitter. He's a titan in the industry. And he's over there at Spire now. And I got to believe that.
Come about a Ducart. I want to go into something. Did it appear recently?
He moved over there December 23.
Well, I was going to say maybe it can't be. I was thinking maybe Junior had some inside information before he picked Corey LaJoie because, I mean, Ducart going over can definitely make that team better just by him going over.
I agree. And see, I thought Dale Jr. was talking a little bit out of his ass, and so I looked up Spire Motorsports, and one of the things that came up is Doug Ducart he's running their whole operation now. He's got oversight. And, I mean, he did that during the Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon era at Hendrick Motorsports. And, by the way, he left Hendrick Motorsports. He didn't get fired. They didn't say see you later. He left, and he wanted to go Chip Ganassi and did. I've just always been impressed with Doug Ducart. He's one of those guys, you know, they always heard about, you know, Hendrick Motorsports fans know the name Marshall Carlson. I mean, they all, you know, speak very highly of him over there, you know, another insider up there. But Doug Ducart's the real thing. And if Doug Ducart's over there, he automatically makes everybody in that facility better. So, and Corey LaJoie, he can plate race, bud. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me
Atlanta,
to see somebody like
sure.
Corey LaJoie win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You think you need to see something out of anybody on this first race, Billy, or are you going to give them some slack?
We'll really like to see something out of Noah Gragson coming. The year he's had off. I don't think we much on him right now, especially at Daytona, but he's kind of the one I'm keeping my eye on. And, you know, of course, Jimmy Johnson running the race if he makes it. In all honesty, one driver that I've got to put some thought on this year is Austin Dillon. If he doesn't get the job done this year, like, Pop's going to have to make it. Hey, because Kyle Busch has done come in and shown them what they can do with the equipment.
And, RCR is the first one to use AI in their command center to make their moves. And that AI looked really dumb when Austin Dillon was driving over there, the best driver. That AI looks a hell of a lot smarter with Kyle Busch behind the helm. So that's something to watch for sure. You remember when I called, who was the guy that drove the Menards car? Paul Menard. Remember I called him? I think Austin Dillon, I think you're right, Billy. Austin Dillon's on his last, this is his last hurrah in the Cup garage, I believe. I don't see him lasting a whole lot longer if he can't improve. Now, he's had a decent career, so we'll see. But I'm kind of thinking that guys like Bubba Wallace, they need to have a good race. They are close to being, you know, they were close to making it last year on points. Daytona, a good Daytona race would go a long way for a team like the 23, right? By the way, Chris Buescher. I think Chris Buescher needs to show something. He's a solid racer, but how long you think he's going to last over there, Billy, if he's not, you know, really producing?
Buescher or Wallace, or both? I think Bubba Wallace. Okay, so we'll go to Buescher. I think it's fit because I think last year he had three back-to-back not have oval track wins, and you know, here Brad Keselowski's not pulled one out yet. So as long as Buescher, we need to see the same thing out of Buescher, at least one win, two wins at most here, and I think he's set. And Bubba Wallace, I don't know, man. I think he's just got Bubba's found something that he's got comfortable in the car, and it could be a scary situation that, well, I don't know, as a competitor, but once you get comfortable, that's scary.
Yep, and that's the one thing that Dale Earnhardt couldn't ever do Reynolds. What's his name? Larry Mack. I mean, that's one thing. He just never was comfortable in the car, and Dale Earnhardt had surgery, and then he got comfortable in the car and kept on winning. So I think guys that just missed the cutoff in the championship run need a good Daytona 500. Obviously, Bubba knows how to plate race, so this is going to be a big – I'm watching him to see if he – you know, Bubba's – my knock on Bubba has always been his mindset. You know, he gets it behind the wheel of the car, and sometimes he turns into a fool. Out of nowhere, he turns into a fool. I think he needs to have a good race. And obviously the guys at the top, here's the other thing, you know, the 9 car, Chase Elliott, the baby Jesus got a little, he came to earth a little bit last year with all of his troubles and struggles. And I think he needs to come out and be strong and be another leader there in that Hendrick Motorsports garage. You know, people didn't talk a whole lot about him for a while last year because he wasn't racing. I think he needs to get back in and get this shake this stuff off and have a really good showing. Billy Bradley, I'll let you go first, bud. Who's your winner and who's your dark horse?
I'm going Denny Hamlin for the win, and the dark horse, Justin Haley.
Oh, God, that's a good pick, son. Son of a gun, damn it. Well, you took the best guy off the board. You took the best guy off the board early, except you left Joey Logano there. So I have to take Joey Logano just because, I mean, the guy's a master at it. He's got best spotter in the garage for this type of race. I think he's going to be just fine up there. As long as he stay out of trouble, it'll probably be Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano up there at the end. So can't go wrong. For my dark horse, man, I think I am going to pick Corey LaJoie. I'm gonna come out and put my mouth where my money where mouth is, whatever the hell that is. I'm going to take Corey LaJoie. I think that team. This is a good place for that team to get up there and do something, and I expect him to do it. Fact of the matter is, anybody can win this damn race, so there's really no bad pick. Hell, even Stenhouse could win this stupid race. But it's going to be a good race weekend. I'm pumped for it. I'm excited for it. I know you are too. I think it's about time we got NASCAR started back up. Had a good Super Bowl. Finished just like it was scripted, Billy, and now we go to something that is completely unscripted and 100% real, the Daytona 500. For Billy Bradley, this is Dado. What do you say we get out of here, son?
Let's go.
Thanks for listening to Off the Rails. Take a listen to Dado's new favorite song,
Damn,
Bougie,
girl.
By Mixpack.
Can you just, like, chill for a second and stop being bougie all the dang time? Let's have some fun, all right? Let's go. Bottoms up.
Soda.
Drinks on me. Later on, after party my crib, but this girl on my right shit.
Why you gotta be so bougie, bougie? Why you gotta be so bougie, bougie? Yeah.
You gotta chill, need to relax. Not everywhere needs a VIP pass. Keep it up, you'll have no real friends left. Designer clothes aren't gonna earn you respect. Just stop, you're being too loud. Your trash talk won't make your mama proud. Snap, snap, show your picture perfect, fake laugh. Back up, you ain't even in the limelight.
Bottoms up,
slow down,
drinks on me.
Oh, wow, oh, wow.
Later on, after party my crib, but this girl on my right shit.
Why you gotta be so blue?
Azusa. It's okay, not my bed, so I'm gonna walk away. Got better shit to do than to entertain you. Said she want the Fendi swimsuit with the Fendi shoes. Then she looked at me, I said, you picked the wrong dude.
I'm out.
Bottoms up.
Slow down, slow down.
Drinks on me.
Oh,
wow, oh, wow. Later on, after party, my crib. But this girl on my right shit.
Yeah, you got me so bougie.